The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good morning. You are joining We the People Radio.
We're joining We the People, get to our seats really fast.
Oh my God, I still have my purse on my shoulder.
Yeah, I'm waiting to see how you get that off your shoulder with the headphones on.
Oh yeah. I don't know what it is about Sunday mornings. There's no traffic. We slide right into our parking places.
And yet we're late.
And we're late.
Yeah, I know.
I don't get it.
There were two cops out there going 90 miles an hour down the street. I was just hoping you weren't part of whatever
they were heading
for. Yeah.
Oh, did you? You passed them? How fast were you going?
I'm just kidding.
Yes, that's a bad idea to pass cops when they're going 90 miles an hour.
Not a good idea. I've had a lot of high-speed chases lately, so.
A lot of shooting lately. Are you kidding me?
This has been a very...
It's not the high-speed chases I'm worrying about.
This has been a busy week in Shasta County for crime. Very busy. You can't say that we're not on the map for something. So,
that's exactly what, you know, we were looking for.
Yeah.
You know, forget high employee... You know, employment.
Yeah.
Forget businesses.
Forget quality. Forget quality of life.
We're clinging to that.
Business climate, healthy economy, low domestic violence, low crime.
We still don't have to live in the Bay Area, though.
Forbes came out. Woo-hoo. Forbes magazine came out this week listing Redding, California, number five, the fifth largest area, or the fifth most dangerous area for women.
Yeah, but is that I remember they did that last time, mm-hmm. and there was like a weird...
Well, I think it has a lot to do with domestic violence.
Right, but it was like a weird per capita thing that in real life, if we were in Stockton, mm-hmm. like, these would
it
be all the calls they didn't even get to.
Some kind of a statistical anomaly of percentage rather than actual bodies.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because,
you know... But still, you know, the perception of that, most people aren't going to dig that deep.
No. They just look at that and go, ah!
Yeah.
But, you know, in real life, out in real life in the country, have you seen our webpage today?
I have.
Yeah. WeThePeopleRadio.us. You should go look at it if you're listening out there.
And if you're tuning in for the first time, you are joining your hosts, Aaron Ryan, Elizabeth Woodward, and our producer, Bob Martin. We the People Radio, KCNR 1460 AM. We are chatting and streaming worldwide at WeThePeopleRadio.us, and I guarantee you people are listening all over the place.
Yes, and our program today, Robert Exter, who puts our webpage together, he called it Home on the Range. So, Bob, in case that fits into the musical cue there, or we'll just have to hum a few bars. That's probably one we could do. With our guests, it's a fun thing. There are two events up here in the northern part of the world. Had one yesterday in Wairika.
How was that?
It was awesome. Actually, it was awesome. People walked out of there. They go, you know what? We don't have to lose this thing. You know, we don't have to. We don't have to. You know, have all of our property rights sucked out from under us, and you know, our ranchers and farmers don't have to be completely decimated. So it's kind of all about finding people who've been there and done that, and want to come back and tell us how they did it.
And here's the reason why you want to stay local with all of the things happening around you. Stay local, because if you focus too much on the big picture, there are so many distractions intentionally put in the middle of the road so that you won't pay attention what's exactly... I was heading toward that. That is just such a wonderful thing to throw out there and distract everybody from everything else that's going on. So put your blinders on and stay local.
Yeah, so we have two of the speakers that were there yesterday. Just in case you want to plan... today in Doris at 2:00, the same cast of characters will be there. It was fantastic.
What was your turnout?
I have no idea. Kind of stink at estimating numbers.
Okay.
But no, it was great.
You were in Wairika yesterday.
We were in Wairika yesterday. So Doris today, same folks, same basic topic. Okay. Did a lot of talk about wolves, and Michael Shaw is the MC for this event.
Okay.
So he pulls it all together under the Freedom Advocates umbrella and kind of ties together how this fits with Agenda 21.
Okay. Because pretty much everything does.
But, you know, we talk to a lot of people who have problems with the agencies and problems with their land use, but we don't often talk to people who actually have solved it or are in the process of solving
it. Right.
So it's kind of good. Today's a resource day. Also, there's a new webpage listed on our site. It is libertyscene.com, LibertyScene.com. And at Liberty Scene, that's the one that Ramona H. Morrison brought up. Let's see. She had a really snappy, I'll have to have her give it. She had a really snappy description of what it was for, but I don't see it right on her front page. These guys are, and also, I'm sorry, I should probably do both people at the same time. Danny Martinez is also on the line with us. So we're going to talk back and forth. I don't know how they figured it out, what they're going to do. We're just going to pretend. They're all up at the Bocciacalupi's Ranch.
Nice.
So they stayed over. They had a big barbecue last night. We skipped that because I had work to do last night. But anyway, we've got all those guys on the line. And so we're going to get input and information for the folks who obviously don't live in the area, but for the rest of you who live within, you know, within driving distance of Doris, you ought to head up there. It starts at 2 o'clock. It's at their community center there, just at the last little zigzag of Doris on your way out of town by the big flagpole. All right. Ramona, Danny.
Before we get started with Ramona and Danny, could we get Charles on the line momentarily? He wanted to talk about a meeting that's coming up on Tuesday morning.
Sounds great.
Okay.
Hey, Charles, haven't heard from you in a while.
I'm doing okay. Speaking of property rights and infringements thereupon, integrated regional water management plan is rearing its ugly head again.
Oh, that's awesome. We love that plan. Kidding.
Yeah, it's on the Tuesday morning agenda, item SDC1, in case anybody wants to know.
That's Shasta County Board of Supervisors, 9 o'clock.
Yes, it is. And they want to sign a letter of recommendation. Never mind the CHP helicopter in the background.
I was just going to ask you if there was an incident.
Is there yet another high-speed chase?
It looks like they've got a fugitive in the Country Heights subdivision area.
That is.
Judging by the flight pattern of the helicopter.
Mm.
Great.
Wonderful.
Lovely.
They want to sign a letter of recommendation supporting this good-for-nothing plan.
Charles, tell us what you really think.
So people should go and pipe up?
One thing that bears stating is this is not the king's water.
It comes up a lot these days. Yes.
Remember that guy you said this is not the king's forest?
Yeah, that happened in Doris, as a matter of fact.
Well, this is not the king's water. Some decision-makers, having chosen to forget that, seem to have developed quite a desperate need for, as Ben Franklin once put it, stones.
And a hush fell over the green. he's all, hello.
Yeah, I'm sure we are.
So are we.
I thought something happened on your end of the line.
We were just messing with you.
That integrated regional thing is coming up again.
If you live in the Redding area or Shasta County, it's going to affect you, actually, in Northern California.
Well, if you live in any of the counties that constitute the Northern Sacramento Valley regional, you know. Yeah,
you heard it here first,
folks. Think of barf noises when you hear the word regional.
We don't actually have to. We heard them.
The Bay Area Regional Federation. Barf. Yeah.
Right.
Very good, Bob.
Bay Area Regional Foundation.
Foundation, whatever.
That's right.
All right, Charles, we got to get rolling here. We're going to get cut off by a commercial. So,
all right.
Thank you very much for the heads up, and look out for the SWAT team that's probably right behind that helicopter. Good luck with that.
Oh, there's at least three RPD cars that have been speeding along in different directions on 273 just in the past few minutes.
Huh.
Trying to catch somebody.
All
right,
thanks to this program, the NSA is now aware of that.
and the NSA
FBI.
Is aware of it. They know.
They think they do.
They do have somebody very important on their payroll, Santa Claus. Because he knows when you're sleeping, he knows when you're awake, he knows when you've been good or bad, and that's definitely something they want to see on a person's resume.
Exactly. All right. All right. We will be back with Ramona.
All right. Dasvidaniya.
All right. Dasvidaniya to you, too. I've got to ask him what that means. I think that means see you later in Russian.
Could be.
Or bye, or maybe it means Harry.
I probably
Harry.
Should have bleeped it, whatever it was.
No, it's I forget it. He says it all the time. Anyway, we'll be back. You're listening to We the People Radio. Off to a strange start, as usual. We do our best. we do our best, but this is all we ever get.
What shall we do about them? When they move into your neighborhood, they take over but good. They want you all body and soul. Then it's just your body. Then they go. What shall we do about them?
Maybe I'll be there to shake your hand. Maybe I'll be there to share the land that they'd be giving away when we all live together. I'm talking about together now.
Can't we all just get along?
No, not really.
Welcome to We the People Radio. Chatting and streaming live, wethepeopleradio.us, or call us at 530-605-4567. Don't forget to go to the webpage because you will find a link to every show that we have ever done. You can send them out far and wide. No excuses. Everything you won't hear in the mainstream media.
We have some sort of a phone.
Including a busy signal.
Are we having a phone situation?
Turns out the busy signal wasn't from Charles. It was from Ramona and Danny. We lost them.
Are they gone now? Or are they back?
They're not back. So
okay.
Oh,
so Ramona and Danny, if you're listening, call back.
So we're home on the range today.
We were until out on the range, the phone dropped.
Well,
we made fun of the NSA. That was it.
Well, why don't we give a little bio on Ramona and
Let's
Danny before they call back? And you want me to do it, or do you want to do it?
Go ahead.
You know.
Oh, by the way.
Right.
But disclaimer, clarification for last week. I was blaming the NSA for my computer problems. Turns out I should have been blaming Bill Gates.
Ah, there you go.
The
Mr.
The
Depopulation.
Computer needed like 12 Microsoft Windows updates or something, which was the root of the music problem last week. Okay, here we go.
Nice, they're back. Okay, so while they're getting reconnected, Ramona Hage Morrison's the oldest daughter of Wayne and Jean Hage. Now, you might not exactly know the name, or you might. She grew up on ranches in Northern California, Central Nevada, has been intimately involved with her family's 22-year-old constitutional Fifth Amendment takings case, Hage versus U.S., pending before the Supreme Court. And lots of other, I mean...
like to hear about that because a lot of people don't know about it.
Exactly. So lots of other related information on the site. Brief bio here on Danny Martinez. He was born into an Arizona ranching family in 1944, graduated from the University of Arizona with a degree in pharmacy in 1968. Many careers beyond ranching have included pharmacies in San Diego, and then he became a franchisee with McDonald's in San Francisco. Got his skipping through. Did all sorts of fun things. During his years in California and New Mexico, he acted as an owner-builder on over 5 homes, moved to Texas, and invested in multi-housing buildings from 90 until 2005. So he's been involved in all these different things. And I think you'll find his input incredibly interesting mm-hmm. because he brings in a big facet of the legal side.
Mm-hmm.
And... Actually, we should let Ramona introduce him. She did a great job yesterday. She had like the perfect segue from her case to his. So I don't know how they're going to. I don't know if they're both going to just talk at the same time, or you guys can do whatever you want because you're out there in the beautiful countryside of Montague. Hi guys.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Ooh, and you sound really good too.
Ooh, yeah. Nice.
Yeah, a second cup of coffee. I feel great.
Well, we're not always blessed with beautiful phone connections and that sort of thing. So we're just happy we can hear both of you. So, how would you like to start this? We've got plenty of time. So, how would you like to roll out the story for people who might not be super familiar with what we're discussing today?
Well, I think the messages that we tried to convey yesterday was that there are solutions. There's remedies in the law, and Danny goes into that so well, that there are ways that we can prevail. Our case, my family's case in Nevada, is an example of that, even at incredible odds. And I think that people need hope, that these property owners and people living in these communities who are impacted by some of the proposals that are being put forth, need some solutions and hope, and that's what we tried to convey yesterday.
That's fantastic. So for people who aren't familiar with your family's case, Ramona, can you give them kind of a thumbnail sketch on what happened and actually how this relates to all of them, whether they own a ranch or not?
Yes. It's hard to thumbnail a 35-year-old story, but basically in 1978, my family moved from Northern California and bought a ranch in Central Nevada, an open range ranch that had about 7,000 acres deeded property and then about 700,000 federally managed lands, grazing allotments. And those the thing is with a Nevada ranch, when you have 1% of your land private, you're entirely dependent on running your cattle on those federally managed grazing allotments. But our ranch had been established in the 1860s, and our predecessors in interest had established a series of property rights, both on the private land but also on those federally managed lands, including vested water rights, which is very applicable to this area, rights of ways, applicable, same issue with regard to these road closures, and we had to defend those rights in court. And ultimately, my father and mother filed a case in 1991 after the Forest Service had put us through the ringer. They had ultimately confiscated our cattle, about 100 head of cattle, at gunpoint with a kind of a paramilitary operation. And my mother and father filed a Fifth Amendment constitutional takings case in the U.S. Court of Federal Claims. Just to abbreviate, there was a lot that happened there, but that we ultimately prevailed in that, had 8 published decisions in our favor, and a $14 million judgment. That's going to be adjusted a little bit, but $14 million judgment plus attorney's fees as a result of that, plus the court recognized our property rights and ruled that it was a temporary taking, so we still have our ranch. And stop me if you need to move on to another subject, but as a result of that, the agencies did not like that decision. They had first tried to derail that case when they filed 4 months after we filed the case, 4 months after filed criminal charges on my father for clearing a ditch right-of-way. He was convicted at the district court level, but the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, of all courts, did overturn that conviction, and he was acquitted. But then again, in 2007, they came after us with trespass charges. Now, we kind of expected it because they had canceled all our grazing permits, and so we were unable to run our ranch, and we knew that they wouldn't reissue those grazing permits, even after we had all these rulings in our favor. So my father and brother determined that they would have to force the issue, and they would have to stand on the rulings of the court. And so they kicked cattle without a grazing permit, and of course the BLM and Forest Service gnashed their teeth pretty good about it. And finally in 2007, a year after my father died, they filed a trespass charge against us filed a trespass case against us in the Federal District Court of Nevada. Out of that case, in part because they ignored those 8 published decisions, in part because they sought remedies outside of the court, they were found to have conspired to take my family's property. This case went completely against them. The 2 of the main witnesses in the case, the BLM manager and the Forest Service ranger, were ordered to hire criminal counsel during the course of the case when the judge heard evidence of criminal conduct. And finally, they were held in contempt of court and ordered to pay $35,000 out of their own checkbook, basically damages back to my brother. And we were put under permanent injunctive relief in this court. Our ranch was restored. Our grazing permits restored at their historical levels. The judge ruled that we had a half-mile forage right around and adjacent to all of our waters. He ruled that we had a procedural and substantive due process right to our grazing preferences. So in layman's language, it meant that they couldn't just simply take the permits arbitrarily like they had in the past, and that we had basically a property interest in those grazing permits. Remember, this ranch was established in the 1860s, bought and sold like all Western Nevada or Western ranches that arise on federal land. The ranch had been bought and sold, and we had established rights under local laws and customs and the prior appropriation water doctrine, and the court recognized that. That's very important. Basically, I guess to make a long story short, our ranch is restored. After all these years, we've had under extraordinary adverse circumstances, and it's a real a real victory, especially when you're talking about property rights that occur on lands that the government always calls public lands.
Mm-hmm. Actually, they just, around here, they kind of call them their lands.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. Like they've actually kind of dropped the whole public thing.
And that was where, that was the difficulty. I mean, we were not defending property rights on some private land. We were defending property rights on quote-unquote public lands. And so it's an incredible story, an incredible, incredible victory. And we're now, you know, looking into... the court also found, by the way, that we had, he made findings consistent with Bevin's complaint, which is a type of complaint that you can bring against individual employees of the government personally. And you can bring charges against them.
And that's when you catch them coloring outside the lines?
Yeah, yeah, when they step outside of the law. Well, that goes, you know, we've been at this for 35 years, so I don't know how far that goes back. But anyway, that's a lot of bureaucrats.
Yeah. That's, well, and I thought it was interesting yesterday because we see that a lot up here in Northern California, and I'm sure elsewhere, that when somebody becomes the target of something like this and decides to fight it, a lot of times that you would think the natural allies would, you know, kind of come forward, but what happens is people get chicken, mm-hmm. and instead they you know, head for the hills, as they say.
Yeah, they target you to scare everybody else off from doing the same thing.
And unfortunately, it worked in your case.
It does work. I've had representatives of the Nevada Cattlemen's Association. I sit on the Board of Agriculture. Representatives of the Nevada Cattlemen's Association speak to the director of the Department of Agriculture to warn him away from this case and from me personally. You know, I don't think... some of those same people were sitting in the room when the court issued his ruling, the judge issued his ruling, and I will tell you, I don't think they feel the same way. You can't underestimate the power of persuasion these federal agencies have. They're tremendously persuasive on one hand. They are, you know, when you go to Washington, D.C. and you do any work in natural resources, half the time you're following a federal agency lobbyist working for the Department of Interior, the Park Service around, who has been lobbying before you. They have nonstop access to our members of, or to our representatives, and they're very persuasive. They're eloquent with these folks. They don't act like they do out in the rural areas. And so they're very persuasive, and then they're able to say, you know, this guy's a bad actor. This family's been a problem all along. They're outlaw ranchers, et cetera, et cetera. And people believe it. But anyway, I think people, once the judge spoke, I think people maybe thought a little bit differently.
I think that happens all over the place in large and small. Now, you know, I know you can never, you can't really rewrite history, but I'd love to know what you think would have happened if all those other local ranchers would have stepped up and you guys would have stood as a unit. I mean, would that have helped, or in retrospect, would that have mattered? I mean, I know it would have been emotionally, you know, better, easier for you guys, but...
Well, it's in that a lot of fair weather friends. That's one thing. But nonetheless, no, the people who are... this, we knew and we recognized, my mom and dad certainly recognized early on, the problem was not going to stay just with us. And the problems that we had now have spread across the West. And when you go and talk to a group of ranchers, it's very... it's like hearing a scratched record. And this story is now repeating itself all over the West. So, yes, I think if ranchers had been had the foresight at the beginning and seen this problem and walked in mass and stuck together, maybe it would have changed things. But at the end of the day, the only person that can defend their property is the property owner themselves. We are each individually responsible for our own liberty and property rights. Mm-hmm. Now, we can get education and we can get out, you know, help from other people, and we certainly have had help from other people along the way. but the one who's ultimately has any standing to defend their property rights is the individual property owner. So I don't blame other folks. I understand the fear and intimidation of the federal agencies. You cannot underestimate that. And so, you know, everybody's going to have to basically row their own boat. What we want to do with Liberty and Property Rights Coalition, however, is take the knowledge, myself and Danny. Danny's, by the way, been in the same exact situation as my family was. His family came under attack by the Forest Service, and ultimately the Forest Service came and confiscated their family's cattle. Basically the same story. But anyway, what we have to do, what we have decided to do with liberty and property rights, is to bring people to bring this information and knowledge. We have learned a few things. Danny says that, well, the government sent him to law school, and they taught him very well. They taught all of us very well. And so it's that knowledge, that combined knowledge, that we want to bring and use to help other property owners on the front end put themselves in a position of strength.
I think that's a huge reminder for people that, you know, for one, if they give up, they lose. And
yeah.
And you guys, this whole thing has been 35 years?
Yeah. It pretty much started when we bought the ranch in 1978. The Park Service came in and wanted to buy the ranch, but what they wanted to buy was the patented acreage. And they said they didn't need to buy the vested water rights or rights-of-ways or roads or improvements on the federally managed lands because they owned
it. Were they willing to pay the property taxes as well?
Or the estate taxes. I've got two estates on this ranch. Mm-hmm. My family does. And we will have to pay estate taxes on those so-called public lands.
Well, we've got to take a really quick break here, but when we come back, just for the folks out there that don't understand the use by private people of public land, maybe you could kind of help people understand sort of how that's done, because you guys did tons of improvements. It isn't like you're just using it. I mean, you're actually managing it.
Yes.
So it's actually saving the people money, and it's taking care of the land. So we'll be right back with you. We're going to hear more from Ramona and Danny. You're listening to We the People Radio. Here we go. There's a little happy little tune for us. We'll be right back in 2 minutes here at KCNR.
Give me land, lots of land under starry skies above. Don't fence me in. Let me ride through the wide open country that I love. Don't fence me in.
Just run and escape. Each place we go, so afraid that he might show.
And we're back with People Radio. We're with our guests, Ramona Hage Morrison and Danny Martinez. And we're talking about federal overreach, unaccountable bureaucracies, and the devastation that they leave in their wake.
Yeah, in their wake, unless somebody like these guys spends 35 years whooping up on them and ultimately...
You know, I have to say that it to fight this battle for 35 years takes an incredible amount of perseverance and fortitude. And, I mean, I guess what else do you have to lose? You know?
Hey, Ramona.
Yes.
Let's go back into your story here a little bit. Talk to folks about what happens on public land and how that interaction is done when you guys utilize it to raise cattle, for instance.
Well, I think first you have to start with the fact that these are across the West. Don't forget there are federally adjudicated grazing allotments across virtually every bit of so-called public land in the West, maybe with the exception of some parks. And those adjudicated grazing allotments are the result of ranchers being able to show up in an adjudication forum and prove that they had pre-existing rights to graze that land. And in our case, we did an exhaustive chain of title back to the ranch's origin in 1866, had over 500 title documents admitted as evidence in both the claims court case and the federal district court trespass case, as well as in the water adjudication that we had on the ranch. And it was the evidence of title to our pre-existing rights that we were asking the court to defend. It's very important because what the public is told is that these are public lands and that these ranchers are there by the mere virtue of the good graces of the federal government, and that they at any time can tell the rancher to basically get off the land. But the problem is, in the way we pled this case, is that we were successful in defending those pre-existing rights that have been preserved in every land law passed by Congress since the beginning. And so, first of all, it's a question of legitimacy. But secondly, when you look across the West, this is a bit of a blanket statement, but when you look at the land management activities of these federal agencies, it doesn't matter whether it's in Nevada or in the forests all up and down the Sierra or going from Taos to Montana, Taos, New Mexico to Montana, and I've driven through all these forests, you look around and the abject disaster that these forests, the condition of the forests are in right now is doesn't take a forest expert to figure out. You can drive through these forests and see how bad their condition is. But the same holds true for rangelands. And I would argue that the worst land managers of all in the last 30 years especially, I don't know about beyond that, but in the last 30 years especially, have been these federal land management agencies and their misguided policies. They are the ones who have brought in conditions in Nevada by the absolute choking out of the livestock industry. We're probably down to a quarter of what we once were in Nevada, and created conditions for rangeland fires. It's not rocket science. They have converted Nevada from a livestock production state to a rangeland fire state. But on our ranch, and on ranches where we're able to run our cattle properly based on the feed conditions, the climate conditions, and so forth, and manage according to the condition of the range, then you can keep fuel levels down, you can graze the land appropriately, and you have some of the best forage for raising a cow and calf that there is. And so I say the best stewards of these lands are usually the rancher. He has the most to lose if he doesn't manage it well.
Well, when you've got generations of families making their living and surviving off the land, you can darn well bet they're going to take good care of it. I mean, to assume anything less than that is just pure naivete.
Well, nobody goes into ranching to do it for one generation or to do it for a few years. I mean, that's not a few-year type project. That's a long-term deal.
We have a lot to lose if we don't manage it well. We have everything to gain, for instance, by installing water improvements. Well, we don't just water our cattle. We water the elk, the elk that they transplanted on us, I might add. By the way, we had elk transplanted on us at the very beginning of this whole thing in 1978. And there's a little problem. We own all the water. The transplanted non-indigenous elk are drinking our water. So this is the conflict that they create in these scenarios. But it is to our benefit to spread water. It is to our benefit to develop springs. But I will tell you, on our southern desert, which is entirely dependent on wells primarily, that when they canceled our permit and we were running no cattle on that area in a valley that's about 60 miles long and 30 miles wide, there was no water. So it doesn't just benefit, it benefits the wildlife and to have us out there spreading water, developing water. In Nevada, you know, the first settlers that came, or the first explorers that came through here, usually had accounts in their diaries of having to eat their horse or their dog to survive and get across Nevada because there was so little wildlife and very little developed water. Now, in Nevada, corresponding with the increase in the ag industry, the more water that was spread for irrigation purposes and more water developed for springs and wells for livestock, it corresponded, an increase in the livestock production in Nevada also corresponded with an increase in wildlife. And we have numbers to back that up. So Nevada is a good example because Nevada is so devoid of water unless it's developed.
And the elk thing, because we're, you know, up in Doris where you'll be today, they're having the exact same problem. Elk showed up like 15, 18 years ago. A couple of elk, and all of a sudden more and more and more. Well, they're surviving on the alfalfa up there.
Yeah.
You know, they live in people's alfalfa fields. So now they're losing their crops because they're busy feeding the public elk, and there's zero compensation for that.
Sure.
No acknowledgement, no compensation. Then they break all their fences, and it's hugely expensive.
Well, and that's the problem we have. You know, elk can make rangeland look like mowed lawn.
Oh, exactly.
And I've seen it. And so I'm not opposed to elk, but, you know, we in the ranching industry are required to manage our numbers. And I find it interesting that the game departments mismanage their numbers to impact us negatively. You know, and elk are a classic example of that. They've done that down in New Mexico. They've absolutely allowed the elk to overrun the place. Meanwhile, the rancher with the vested stockwater rights and the forage rights out there has been ignored. So, anyway, that's what's important about this case. We did force a recognition of that, and the elk are something that we still have to deal with, and we may deal with the State Department of Wildlife.
Interesting, because the folks up there would love to have some mechanism to push back. I mean, at this point, you know, Fish and Game says, "Well, gee, it's not our problem. You guys ought to put in on a project land, was it PLM, project land management, and then we would help you pay for the fencing." Well, it also it also becomes like a little bit of a partnership. It's like, wait a minute, I have to make a deal with who to get what?
Yeah,
people aren't fired up about that.
That would be the devil.
Exactly. All right, we better take one more quick break or it'll all happen at the top of the hour. We'll be right back here on We the People Radio. You're listening to KCNR 1460 AM. And that's
Morrison.
Like Ramona's theme song.
You're fat, man.
Yeah, it is.
Hey, listen to
you
him. They're at a party.
Our job is to manage people. And I go, oh.
Does he know he's on the air?
No.
Hey, Danny, do you know you're on the air?
Hey.
Yeah.
You were back. I can tell you guys are having a party, aren't you? Darn it, we're not
solving
even.
The world's problems here.
I like it. We use all our off time for that. We know you guys are all up there goofing off, and we're cutting into your goofing off time, and we're not sorry about it. Actually, we're good with it. You are our hostages. So we're holding you over, and we'll have plenty more time to speak with both these folks. But what would you like to tell people so that they stick with us for the next hour? What do they need to know so far?
Well, I think maybe one of the important things to know is that I tell the story of our case as an example, because we had insurmountable odds. The property rights we were trying to defend, as I mentioned, exist on federally managed lands, and we were told by attorneys and judges at the time, you know, that we weren't going to be able to defend those. But the same principles apply for property owners everywhere, no matter the type of property, whether they have fee patented land with irrigated water rights, whether they have access issues via roads, and the Forest Service is trying to close their roads, whether they have the importation of wolves and the wolves are being used to run them out of, basically create a land clearance condition, and so we can use the same principles that we use in our case that Danny's using in his case, as well as understanding of the law and procedure. And Danny has studied extensively on that, using the law and procedure to protect those property rights. So I think that I tell that story to tell people it's not that we can prevail.
See, and that's the part that people need to realize, because the naysayers, like all the people who abandoned you guys over the course of that fight, they're all out there nibbling away at the fighters everywhere else. Mm-hmm. You'll never win. The government's too big. You can't beat them. How great was it to hear that you had beaten them?
Well, sitting in the courtroom on June 6, 2012, when the judge spent about 6 hours issuing his bench ruling on the trespass case, and when he said finally that the government had entered into a conspiracy to deprive my family of our ranch, you know, that was 35 years in coming. We knew that, but to hear it from a judge is an entirely different thing. And so it was remarkable. There aren't really words to describe it. I will tell you, the attorneys that were in that room they were just floored with what the judge had said in our case.
Wow, that's fantastic. Just out of curiosity, I'm always curious about the social element. Did any of the Cattlemen's Association or any of those folks like come back around and say, hey, you know,
well, we
nice job?
It was kind of comical. About the 19th day of the trial, the judge had stopped the trial. It was getting interesting. I mean, things were... those who sat through the trial, and Danny was one of them, sat through the trial every day. The trial went from somewhat monotonous, being somewhat monotonous at the beginning because the government was going through their case, and it was pretty much sleeping material. And then on the 19th day, the judge stops the government attorney from asking any more questions because she had asked questions of her witness, which implicated him criminally. So, to be honest with you, the government's attorneys were, to some extent, are very helpful to us. But he had heard that criminal implication, and so he stopped the trial and ordered that witness, the BLM manager, and the forest ranger to hire criminal counsel before the trial could proceed. And so we had called at that point, a friend of mine had called a couple of the leadership of Cattlemen's and said, you might want to get down and see this. And so they did. And they sat through that, and they were, as I said, on some level, you can't blame these guys. They have been fed a story from the federal agencies, and the federal agencies are given great deference in being truthful. And, or at least people have a tendency to want to believe what they say, and you can't believe them, but, I mean, you can't blame them, but on some level, as I say, if their lips are moving, they're usually lying. And
we've experienced that here, too.
But that's from 20 years of litigation. You know, we've had them in deposition, so we have a little, we can back that up. But anyway, so they were there, and they afterwards had invited us to speak around the state on the case and what it meant. And so I think it was good for them to hear it from a judge. Let's put it that way.
That's cool. So if you hang in there long enough, you can not only beat them, but you can pull in your naysayers as well.
Yeah, and speaking
of listen, in any conflict, there's going to be naysayers.
And speaking of naysayers,
maybe you better just give it up right there.
What happened to all your naysayers?
I'm sorry?
What happened to all the naysayers?
Well, I think these are people who have ranches too, a lot of them, and
sure.
I think that now they're very encouraged. They have hope. Listen, as I said before, you cannot overstate the fear and intimidation the government is able to accomplish against these ranchers.
That's
they
the part
afraid.
That people are always, you know, totally freaked about. It's like, what if they turn their guns on me? I'll never have enough. I'll never have enough money to defend against what they'll do to me and my family. And how did you guys do that?
By the grace of God.
Right.
I don't really have a good answer. We had people support us along the way, and sometimes it was just sheer grit. My father, thank God, was a very determined, had a lot of faith, and he just stayed the course. My mother with him, and then when my mother passed away, and Dad remarried. He married Helen Chenoweth from Idaho, a former congressman, and boy, she got in there and she was swinging with him too.
Now, was your father there in June of 2012?
No, he passed away in 2006 with cancer.
Okay,
dang. And what was the name of his book? I wanted to add that to our webpage, but I didn't look that up yet. What was the name of the book he wrote?
Storm Over Rangelands. It was. I would add also that book was purchased by the Supreme Court, U.S. Supreme Court Law Library. It's the only private publication, government funded, articulating the argument of the private rights that exist on these federally managed lands.
Outstanding. All right, everybody has 5 minutes break. Then we're coming back, and we're going to hear. I'm sure we're going to hear from Danny too. And so you guys figure out how you want to play it for the second hour. We'll be back with you at We the People Radio here on KCNR, 1460 AM.
Yes, hour number two of We the People straight ahead here at KCNR, Shasta Redding. Bye.
With We the People Radio. We lost Elizabeth somewhere in translation. She'll be here momentito. We're here at KCNR, 1460. It's a good place to be, you know? Hey, catch us on the web, wethepeopleradio.us. We are we're in the throes here of chatting with Ramona H. Morrison and Danny Martinez, two folks from very different parts of the country, Nevada. And Danny, are you in Arizona now?
Why do we think I'm
here. Are you in Arizona or New Mexico now?
I'm in Arizona.
That's what I thought.
My battle is in Arizona, and I've got involvement in the livestock industry in Nevada as well.
Is this is it your turn now to be on? Is that what you guys decided?
We're both here.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, okay, so we're talking about property rights. We're talking about all the things that our ranchers and farmers are facing. But, you know, before we go into more detail about that, you guys did a really good job of explaining to people who are not connecting the dots. I mean, obviously, without ranching and farming, no food hits your table, just in case people are confused about where it comes from. But
it's the grocery store.
Yeah, it's the grocery store. We make beef in the grocery store. But honestly, what's the implication for people with all these things that are happening to you guys and the wins that you're having?
I think people at one time didn't realize that they had property rights out there. Property rights can be something that's tangible, and it could be intangible as well. It's being defined by Congress, and the intangible part sometimes is what people don't understand that they need to defend, and that an easement, the right to certain activities, is intangible, but it's a right. It's a substantive right: the right to travel, the right to your right to believe in the God of your choice. I mean, it's all of these are property rights. They're defendable property rights that need to be exercised. Now, the biggest problem is our public schools don't teach us this. But all of this we brought to this country in the time that it was formed. It was based on these principles that we brought over. We adopted all the principles of the Magna Carta. You know, this is all incorporated into our government. What I have learned is that the same system of harassment and intimidation that was used in the Hage case is pretty much their MO. This is how they get people to back off and relinquish their rights or to abandon them. And I had concluded that this is a long-term plan, and to get people off of the I guess the rural areas, the farms, the ranchers, people that are benefiting or earning a living out there by the exercise of these rights. They're trying to put pressure on them so that they will eventually abandon them. And that we see this to be a pattern throughout the West. I've got friends in Wisconsin, Minnesota. The problems that we face are basically the same problems, even though the subject matter might be a little bit different. Anytime you end up in court, the government's always claiming title. They want to... whatever the case is, I've just seen it, is that they try to spin the case to one of determining legal title. Well, the United States can't prove legal title in the West. They claim it to be under the Guadalupe-Hidalgo Treaty, and it's just not there. In fact, if you read the treaty, the government paid $15 million, but primarily to move the boundaries between the international boundary to the Rio Grande. That's what the $15 million was. And so I think a lot of it is progressive. I think this plan started early on. Ramona is doing research for a case back in Washington, and the archives ran across memos from the federal agencies trying to figure out how they were going to deal with the ruling in Kansas versus Colorado. They were at that point trying to figure out how they could circumvent that.
That was in 1911, right?
1907.
Yeah. So this, I mean, you know, some of this started with the president, with the assassination of President McKinley and the ascendancy of Teddy Roosevelt, the first progressive.
Yeah.
Funny, it always goes back to that. It's not, it's always a policy thing, you know? It's a mindset that causes this. It isn't about land use. It isn't about animals. It isn't about the things that they say it's about.
Never is.
It's always about this big sweeping agenda.
Mm-hmm.
So then when nobody lives out in the rural areas and nobody raises beef and nobody has farming, you know, mm-hmm. I guess we're all supposed to live in cities and little rabbit hutches.
Sure.
And I don't know.
And we
does the government produce food somewhere that we don't know
and
about?
And we eat what they decide we eat.
And people out there, some people still think that this is just nutty, but, mm-hmm. You know.
Well, have you noticed the price of beef lately per pound? You know, my mother went to get a roast from a decent producer of beef products. $7 a pound.
Yikes.
Yeah. What has happened is, in this, we're just talking about the industry. But see, it's everything has a cause and effect, and the government wants to control food production. They want to control property rights. They want to control because in the process they control the people, their behavior. Mm-hmm. They can get people to go and live where they want to. They get people to abandon their rights because it's no longer economically viable. It causes stress, all these things that they use. And when I started studying all of this, I was looking for a solution or a remedy in all of this. And that's where I became baffled. It was like an independent think tank, and I was looking for a remedy, and I found the remedy clearly in the law. I found it in the Constitution. I found it in the laws, and then I also was looking to find out where their authority came from. See, and that's because I was looking for my remedy, and in exercising all this and looking for it and digging for it, I found that the remedy is there for everyone. The problem is that we have to read all that stuff. It's like Thomas Jefferson said. He said, you know, if we think as a people we can be ignorant and free, it's something that never was and never will be. So the solution to freedom is knowledge. We have to start learning and understanding how the laws work and how they affect all of us. They came at me under the Endangered Species Act, and at that point, I didn't have an attorney, and I just didn't want to put my future and my family's future in the hands of someone that may or may not know how to defend it. So I took that responsibility upon myself, and in the process I found that basically there's a collusion between the agencies and the environmental groups.
Well, the environmental groups use taxpayer-funded grants to then turn around
right.
and sue these agencies to do what they want them to do.
Yeah, in my case, I found that there was collusion between the agency and the environmental group. And whenever in time there's any kind of collusion, it deprives the court of any jurisdiction over it, because it's the fruit of that has fallen from the poison tree. There's no provision in our system of law to adjudicate anything that where there's fraud or collusion or misrepresentation before the court.
Well, and isn't it hard to go after basically a non-governmental organization or an NGO or any
No.
kind of an organization, like an environmental organization steps in lieu of an agency? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They become obscure.
Kind of hard to...
It's like trying to pin Jell-O to a wall.
Yeah, in my particular case, because I saw this, I saw a pattern, so I could anticipate what their next move is going to be. Before they even charged me with any kind of violation of endangered species, I had already researched that law to figure out how I was going to defend that. But I also found out that in reading a lot of that there has to be, in fact, a damage to somebody. That can't be a hypothetical damage. It has to be a damage in fact, and under the Constitution, it's Article 3. There has to be a true case or controversy, and the term that has been adopted by the courts is standing to sue, and that's what they don't have. See, and the federal agencies, of course, they've already worked this thing out. The environmental group will sue the agency. The agency concedes, or they come to some agreement. The environmental group gets a lot of money for all of this. The agency is able to use that case against the private property owner, and in this particular case, the ranchers, to deprive them of their property. And nobody ever challenges, but I did. And once I immediately started to challenge them during the administrative process. And when I started bringing up the issues and the merits and the law of the case, they decided they didn't want to play this game. And so they dropped the process. So, and what I learned is that the rancher is the owner of these rights. He may not have legal title, but the Supreme Court says that he has the equitable title to that land, and it's already been adjudicated when they created the allotments. In the West, it's water that controls the land. It's not the landowner that controls. It's the owner of the water. And in the West, and that is the key to this whole picture, is that he who controls the water controls all the land.
And that's why they want all these regional water things and all that. They want it under the control of unelected bureaucratic little tribunals. We hang with us. We've got to take a really quick break, or we'll have them all in... we'll have them all right in a row, actually, which we do quite a bit of. Bob, we jamming you up, or are we good? Cool. Be back here with We the People Radio. My favorite song. This is such the Siskiyou County theme song. Here at KCNR 1460 AM.
Billy man, come on. 6 o'clock news says somebody been shot. Somebody's been abused. Somebody blew up a building. Somebody stole a car. Somebody got away. Somebody didn't get too far. Yeah, they didn't get too far.
Grandpappy told my pappy back in my day, son, a man had to answer for the wicked that he done. Take all the rope
in Texas by the tall old tree. Round up all of them bad boys, hang them high in the street for all the people to see.
That justice is the one thing you should always find. You gotta saddle up your boys, you gotta draw a hard line.
When the gun smoke settles, we'll sing a victory tune, and we'll all meet back at the local saloon.
We'll raise up our glasses against evil forces, singing whiskey for my men, beer for my horses.
Welcome back. Hour two of the We the People Radio Show. Just talking about the Freedom of Information Act. I think that song was perfect for that, don't you?
Yeah, we were chatting about that out in the lobby. And, you know, for all those people out there that are involved in different issues, especially government stuff, and you want to be filing all these Freedom of Information requests, you ought to get a hold of your elected representatives, especially if they're folks that stand up for the Constitution. Mm-hmm. Have them file them, because your congressman's office is going to get the request back, or your senator's office will get it back a lot faster than you will.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And there are ramifications if they lie to them.
So before we jump back with our guests, you are joining your host, Aaron Ryan, Elizabeth Woodward, and our producer, Bob Martin. We're streaming and chatting live at WeThePeopleRadio.us. Go to our website. You will see everything about today's guests, which is really nice because there's some substantial biographies and a lot of links to related topics, so you can follow along while you're listening. And check out the archive of shows dating back almost 3 years. Everything under the umbrella of limited government, fiscal responsibility, and adherence to the Constitution.
There you have it. And Ramona's new website. Hey, Ramona, we forgot in the first hour. I'm using that term, we've, loosely. I forgot. The libertyscene.com.
That's okay, I'll go down with you.
I'll throw you under the bus with me. Libertyscene.com is just coming up. And I actually didn't see a spot on there for people to sign up for updates, so that part isn't probably active yet.
No, it isn't active. We should have the rest of it up, I would say, early this week. We showed that yesterday to our audience because it was a teaser of good things to come. But what we are doing is the full website will include not only fresh news, instant news, basically, through new technology, of all things having to do with property rights and these agencies and so forth, sustainability, Agenda 21, all that. We will include fresh news on that. But then the rest of the website will include a resource area for people wanting information on the law as it relates to all these issues, or on policy, or on grassroots activism. And the Liberty and Property Rights Coalition, Liberty Scene website, our objective, and of course Danny is part of this and several other people, our objective is to develop an organization where we come alongside other people and organizations in their battles and work together to carry out this battle and defend our property rights. So we want it to be a one-stop shop for people and organizations to be able to utilize and come to for all news relating to property rights and all resources relating to property rights.
That is fantastic, because, you know, at the end of the day, there is a ton of information out there, and one of the most difficult things is for people to actually, you know, they get discouraged just looking at the volume of it.
Yes.
You know, not everybody's Danny Martinez and says, you know what, I'm going to do my own legal work because I'm going to read all this stuff. You know, a lot of people just go, okay, I think I'm just going to get crushed by the government.
But I sort of fit into that category. But over the years, you know, Danny and I have communicated for a long time, and you know, if you just take this incrementally and start as a matter of habit, reading these these laws and trying to come to an understanding, not trying to do it all at once.
Sure.
But trying to come to an understanding of these laws. I encourage it. People, listen, the only person that can defend your property is the property owner. And so we are, you know, we have this great nation, we have these liberties that were given to us by our founding fathers, but they're worth nothing if we don't defend them.
And God.
And, exactly. So we're very blessed, but they're worthless if we don't defend them. And the only person that can defend the property, their property and their liberty rights are the individual themselves. So it's our responsibility. Listen, my feeling on this is, if we want to preserve this government, you know, the communist, Danny reminded me earlier this morning, one of the 10 planks of the Communist Manifesto is to destroy property rights. If we want to defend our liberty and defend this constitutional republic, one of the best tools that we have in our at our fingertips to defend those rights is our property rights. But it takes individual responsibility. We can't go looking for everybody else to bail us out. We can look for resources. We can look for help. But at the end of the day, we ultimately are responsible.
Well, I think that can't be overstated enough. And unfortunately, what winds up happening in many cases is that people, they fall prey to these conservation easements and that kind of thing, looking as a tool to get the government off their back.
And to save on their property taxes.
Sure, but they become partners.
Right.
You know, they think, oh, I'm getting targeted, so I better do what they say, and I could still keep my property, but I can have an easement. But what would you say to those folks?
And the thing about those conservation...
It's kind of a pact with the devil.
Yeah, because with the conservation easements, don't they... Part of that agreement is that the government agencies can come onto that land anytime they want. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Yeah, but they'll tell the landowner, oh, no, you retain all the rights, and but oftentimes there are problems when they go to sell, passing it on to their children, so title changes or any of that. So
they give up more than they realize.
Yeah, there are ways for you to actually not have to do that sort of thing as a, you know, making deals you don't want to make. So, all right, where would you like us to go now? Use guys.
Talk about this, Danny.
Hi, Danny. You sound small and far away. Can you come back again?
Well, you're on mute. We're working our phones here.
Right, yeah, on.
Sorry about that. This is Danny.
There we go.
When I look at a problem, I always look for a solution. And throughout, what I've learned is that not every law is applicable to us or to our property rights. And that is the biggest straw man out there. Is that I, in order to understand what I was reading, when I would be reading a case to determine how the dicta of the judge had what he said, so that I could conclude what was decided in the case, I learned that I had to learn more than just that. So what I did was I studied statutory construction and interpretation. So when I read a law, I could understand how it applied to me. So there's a doctrine of law that is used in statutory construction, and that is the doctrine of retroactivity. That means to go backwards, and the doctrine of prospectivity, to go forward. And so what I learned is that they may pass a law today, but it's not really applicable to my property rights if they already existed prior to the passage of the law. So, and that is something that is needs to be understood by people, especially if they have a property interest involved, because if our legislature passes a law and they try to impose that law upon you and force you to do something that there's no provision for, because those rights were acquired under a previous law, it really has no effect on you. And so what I've learned is that when Congress passes a law, or whether the state passes a law, they've got to follow certain guidelines. And there's always, always a provision in there called the savings clause. And sometimes we have to look for it, but it's there. It's in all of them. I've I've recognized it because I know what I'm looking for. I'm looking for the savings clause in all of this. And in doing so, I've realized that, listen, if these rights were acquired under previous time and place, they can't infringe upon these rights by applying them backwards. And that is what I've learned, and that's what people need to look at, is that look at the law of your case. And that means if you have a water right, if you have a property right or easement, real estate that's under the real estate, you've got to go back to the time that that right was acquired. And if whether it was acquired by you as a new right or whether it was acquired by the original settler that acquired those rights, and especially in the regards to water in this state, that's the law of your case, not what the legislature has passed after that. They've created all these regional lawful governments that basically you after the fact, and those don't really affect your property rights, and that we all have to understand that the purpose of these regional compacts is to diffuse and to destroy the sovereignty of the state and the counties and the local governments. It's basically a it's easier to control a compact because you can infiltrate that with numerous unelected officials. So the thing is that citizens have got to understand, don't subject your property to these compacts because they're not really applicable to you unless you have signed on to some kind of benefit, and then they or have signed something that constitutes a contract, and then it can be imposed upon you. And that's just some of the basic property rights that I've concluded just in the knowledge that I have acquired by just reading that and being my own, looking for my own attorney, acting as my own attorney, because I had to defend this in court. I had to plead it properly, and I was up against the most powerful government in the world, and the resources they throw at you, and so that's what I was forced to learn all of this. Well, that's the purpose of what we want to do with the Liberty and Property Coalition is to catalog all of this.
Yeah, so that other people who, I mean, let's face it, if you are, God forbid, you know, you've got a full-time operation that you're running, you've got kids, you know, you've got all these things to do, and most people can't sit in their basement and learn all this. Or they just may not have the aptitude for it. I mean, it just might not be their skill set.
I think that we just need to take responsibility for our own property. A lot of people might be intimidated by this, but I think on some level we still have to own it. One of the things I was going to mention that Danny reminded me of and that we discussed a little bit yesterday is that one of the first things that property owners can do to document their property rights is do an exhaustive chain of title back to the original first appropriator or settler. And that exhaustive chain of title will document full title, not just color of title, to property. It will, as Danny said, take that property right back to the time and place in which it was first appropriated. And that applies both for fee patented land or private land, but it also applies to water rights and easements that were created at that time. You know, let's talk about rights of ways, for example. When you think about it, when the early settlers came in here, they were horseback and they had wagons and they had cattle and livestock, and all of the access that they used to get to and from their homestead is basically a historical vested right of way. And this whole West is absolutely covered with historical right-of-ways of people of the first settlers. And those are all protected in every subsequent law of Congress, up to and including the Federal Land Policy and Management Act. But the way you document these access rights, for instance, or vested water rights, is through an exhaustive chain of title. So I highly recommend that that people do that. We have resources on the website that how-to that people can take. It's not complicated. Somebody can go to the recorder's office and do it themselves. It's not, like I said, not very complicated. They can do it themselves. But and then the other thing is that that chain of title, I mentioned 500-plus title documents plus another probably 70 water rights documents that were a part of our evidence in our court case. That was the key evidence in our court case. I mean, we had lots of other evidence, but in terms of documenting our pre-existing rights, it was absolutely essential that we got the title evidence admitted into the record in order to prove our case. I cannot overemphasize how important that chain of title is.
I want to, we need to take a quick break, but I want you to do, I know it seems kind of self-evident, but do, when we come back, a little example. You did an example of how that exhaustive chain of title, what specifically that means, because it really was so simple that I thought, gee, I wonder how many people have actually figured that out. We're going to come right back and hear about that. Thank our advertisers here on We the People. You're listening to KCNR 1460 AM.
Welcome back to We the People Radio. Join us at wethepeopleradio.us.
And you can't see the forest for the trees because they're so darn overgrown.
Hey, so we were talking
about
basically the chain of title, or going back to the beginning of time on a piece of property, and that the rights that you have as a current property owner go back to the original owner that first took over that piece of property.
Yeah, so, you explained it really well yesterday, Ramona.
That's good. I can't remember what I said.
Yeah, do that. Do that again.
No, but a chain of title in simple terms is really just primarily the deeds, all the deeds and any other conveyance documents going back to the origin, going back to the patent. And as I talked to a gal who worked for a title company last night, and I wasn't quite certain about California law, but there is a law in California that historically, early law, that required a survey of a homestead or what we call a possessory interest claim on the part of the first settler. So if some early settler came into the country, they would file hire a surveyor, they would make a survey of the possessory interest claim and then record that at the county recorder's office. And so in Nevada, and apparently here as well, property was often patented many years after the settlement actually occurred. And the reason for that is that the official U.S. government surveyors didn't come in and survey this. You know, it took a while to survey all the West. And so you had to wait for that official survey then to be able to issue patents. And so, at least U.S. patents. And so, quite often, the patent is substantially later than the first settlement. And that's particularly true in this country because you guys were all part of the Oregon Trail settlement, which happened clear back in the 1850s. So you want to take that chain of title and the deeds and conveyances of surveys back behind the patent to the actual first appropriator. In some cases in Nevada and California, that goes back to a land grant from the King of Spain. You want to take that thing back as far as possible to the first appropriation. And then finally, just a story that's a bit of an aside, we took a tour through Ronald Reagan's house down in on the ranch down in Southern California out of Santa Barbara. And right there on the wall in Ronald Reagan's house is this chain of title for that piece of property going back to the King of Spain.
Wow.
That document, I cannot overemphasize. If you prepare your chain of title, put a big cover on it, do not throw away, and stick it in the safe for posterity. It is that important of a document. Tell your kids never to throw that away.
Well, it just goes back to the fact that you got to know your history.
Uh-huh. And what exactly, so for people that are now going, oh, okay, I could figure that out, what exactly will that do for them that they can't do any other way?
Well, it's the primary, listen, you can't go argue about property unless you have evidence that you own property. And a deed is not evidence of that. It's something they call color of title. A warranty deed basically is something that says in layman's terms that, yeah, there's probably title back there somewhere, but it in and of itself as a standalone document is not title. Full title is an exhaustive chain of title. And it documents, it basically brings the property rights of the first appropriator, the first settler, forward into your name. And so it's that full chain of title or exhaustive chain of title that you need in your possession before you start going into an administrative situation or whatever and saying, I have these pre-existing property rights that date from the 1860s or the 1850s and you need, and your action, whatever it is, the importation of wolves, the demolishment of a dam or whatever it is, whatever the agency action is, then that it diminishes that pre-existing right, then must be, can be defended with that evidence.
And how does that intersect with, so you own property, you have a ranch, and they've introduced elk into your area.
Mm-hmm.
What would that look like? What would that process look like? How would they use that to fix that problem?
Well, let's just use our
example. Kind of broad brush, I guess.
Yeah. It depends on which agency is involved. It's probably the State Game Department.
Yep.
It depends on if they're impacting the patented land, say the pasture, the meadows and all that. And it depends on if they're impacting water rights. And you would use that exhaustive chain of title to document any and all of those things and make that part of the evidence of any that your rights were being impacted and diminished, really, by the policy, whatever it was, elk, wolves, whatever. And but you have to be able to document that. You might need to do a study on how they're impacting you. But nonetheless, the first evidence is that you've got property in the first place. And like I said, a deed is not sufficient evidence.
Well, I think that's huge. How did you guys figure that out anyway?
We worked with some people. In my case, in my family's case early on, my mom did the chain of title on Pine Creek, and it involved numerous patents. I can't remember, about 50 patents and,
wow,
and a bunch of water rights and all that. She's probably spent 2 years because it was such a, the ranch is about the size of an area of same as Rhode Island, to give you an idea. So I don't say this to scare people in terms of how much time she spent doing it, but she's probably spent upwards of about 2 years off and on, just when she'd get a chance, going down to the courthouse and pulling records. But we had some people that we were working with who used that principle. And it's used commonly in adjudications, in water adjudications. It's how we documented our vested water rights. So when I want it to be understood, this is how you document vested water rights. This is how you document historical rights of ways, roads, ditches, pipelines, and so forth. It's the same. You use that same evidence. There's records of those things in the recorder's office, and you want to get all of them and incorporate them into your chain of title.
That is.
But I might also add one other thing. A lot of the settlement rights that were established, especially on the historical rangelands, including stock water rights and so forth, rights of ways. There was no law historically to record those, requiring those to be recorded. They're unrecorded interests. But what you want to do is use your chain of title to document that you were out there using that. You want to use assessment, historical assessment roll records to document that your predecessors and interests were, for instance, had livestock out there. And so a lot of these interests are unrecorded, but they're conveyed nonetheless under a deed, under the word called appurtenance. And those, if you look in virtually every deed and patent, there, that word is in there, and that is a catch-all legal term that conveys all those unrecorded interests.
That's awesome, and I think that'll help a ton of people. Now, all this information will be on libertyscene.com, correct?
Right.
Okay, so the step-by-step, we'll be able to, you know, people will be able to walk through that and send their friends there.
I usually give my email out, you know, for the people who actually get stuck down at the courthouse and have a question that they can call or email me, and I'm happy to, usually it's a very quick answer.
Okay.
Not, I will tell you, it is not rocket science. So I encourage people just to go do it.
So for all those people who said, I think it's rocket science. And actually, if I'm sure we have your email. I know I have your email, so it's okay to put that on the site?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So wethepeopleradio.us will have that information for you. And then in our remaining, you know, what do we have, like 8-9 minutes, something like that, what would you guys like to share with people?
Let's see. What would I like to tell people?
Yeah.
That the Supreme Court has said that the rights belong to the belligerent claimants in person. So all of us have to take responsibility for protecting our own property, and it's not something that we can delegate to the local governments or whatever it is. We personally have got to take that personal interest and protect that property, and we've got to be belligerent about it. We cannot allow these socialists to take our properties away from us, because this is what one of those substantive rights that we're entitled to. You know, we've got to protect that.
So for all those people that, you know, all those people who think that it's something that somebody else is going to do for them, that why doesn't the president do it? Why doesn't their congressman, their lousy board of supervisors, you know, bottom line is look in the mirror, it's you.
Yeah, stop waiting for somebody else to do it.
And you have, and that they have the power to do it. That's the thing. A lot of folks think that they don't have the power to do it, and you discovered otherwise.
Yeah, it requires knowledge, which is probably the focal point of what Liberty and Property's mission is to provide the knowledge that people will need to protect their property and the procedure. What I've learned is that you have to have the knowledge and the procedure. That the courts can be intimidating, and I studied the courts. I took a course from UCLA on how the court system worked and stuff, and what I found was is that these courts are now blends of both law and equity. And equity is a term that was developed in England, and they had assigned certain courts to handle the equitable part of the law, and they were called the Chancery Courts. And now in the United States, we've got blends of both law and equity. So when we go into court asking the court for any kind of equitable relief, we have to establish the law of the case first. And that's the importance of studying the law and to point out to the court what the law is and what the law specifically says. And then the court can grant you the equitable relief you're looking for.
That is, you know, all this stuff, you know, these are things that people lose their property and then find out later or just give up. Honestly, there are people who have beaten the system, as it were, because the system It has just gotten really confusing and really cumbersome, but it isn't impossible.
Well, you know, and it's like most things. It's cumbersome and it's huge and it's complex, but because it's grown so big, there's a lot of loopholes. You just have to look for them.
Sure. I mean, our rights are still there. The Constitution still stands. So for all those people, too, that are like, well, why doesn't anybody follow the Constitution? Again, it's held by our individual belligerents. I like that. I like the belligerent rights. We're going to come right back. Apparently, there was one more break that I looked at the computer and I thought, hey, look, it's not there. And okay, I guess it was there the whole time, but it doesn't show it. So we'll be right back with you in 2 minutes and wrap up the hour with Ramona and Danny. You're listening to We the People Radio on KCNR 1460 AM.
And we're back. Before we wrap up the end of the hour, we want to have you tune in next week, We the People Radio, chatting, streaming, and providing all kinds of great news that you won't find in the mainstream media at wethepeopleradio.us.
And I forgot what we're doing next week, so it'll be a surprise. We'll send you an
email. It always is. We never know.
Hey, so now what do you guys want to say at the very end here? We've got about a minute and a half. Uh-oh. They're gone.
I
hear them talking in the background.
Are they eating breakfast?
Hello.
No, we're here.
Oh, hey. You were all
hit the mute button. Sorry about that.
You were all small again.
I think the main thing is that the defense of our liberty and property is one of the most essential things that we can do to protect this constitutional form of government. And it is not something that is it's something that people can do. You start getting educated and you start doing the research, you start putting your evidence of property together through the title work, and we hope that we can help people through Liberty and Property Rights Coalition to do that.
Well, I think they couldn't have better teachers because there's nothing like success.
And I want to encourage people to go to WeThePeopleRadio.us, go to 24HourPatriots.com, go to Support Rural America. Is it .com or .org?
.com.
There's all kinds of information.
There's tons of stuff, tons of information out there, and we've just added you guys to the Support Rural America page, and we are looking forward.
Thank you. Good luck today.
Seeing you and Doris today.
Thank you.
2 o'clock.
Thank you. Bye.
All right. Bye, guys. Danny Martinez, Ramona H. Morrison, talking about property rights. If you missed the early part of the show, catch us on the archives. We will be back with you next week doing something super fun. It's a mystery.
Wake up, America, you're too young to die.
And thank you, Aaron and Elizabeth. The Don Shulman Show is next here at KCNR. Shasta ready.